This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Welcome back to Power Business. We just had a remarkably important conversation with Professor Joe Quinnot from Stellenbosch University's Law Department regarding today's Constitutional Court judgment, a split judgment, split 5-4 between the 9 justices of the Constitutional Court relating to the question of whether the minister had the right to issue those regulations that were issued at the beginning of 2017 relating to public procurement. They became known as the pre-qualification criteria, and of course the consequence of that is that Afro Business argued that actually it was at odds with what the country's constitution required. Their justices were divided on a narrow point, a narrow interpretation of, as it turned out, just 3 words. The words were narrow and expedient. They said, well, actually, it looks like the minister didn't have the powers. It has enormous implications for public procurement, as you can imagine, because if it cannot be done on a universal level, if the rules cannot be done on a universal level, what is to be done? So we'll definitely be following that up to see how the Ministry of Finance is going to tackle this remarkably important issue, particularly in light of the fact that public procurement has become the place where so many people go and exploit loopholes in order to get something extract something out of the state. So that's something that we're definitely going to be following up on. We're now moving on to another equally important conversation regarding electricity in South Africa. Now, of course, there is no load shedding today, as far as I know, but of course, that doesn't stop Eskom from giving you an update in about 10 minutes' time saying otherwise. But rather, we are looking at the couple of bills that are now currently pending. The first one is the Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill, which is up for public comment. And then the second one is the Draft Electricity Pricing Policy. If you'd like to give us your inputs onto those two documents, you can call us on 0861 987 000. You can also tweet us at PowerFM987. I do have 2 guests with me who are experts in this world of energy and all things relating to how we get charged for electricity, for example. First one is Brian Kamanzi from the Institute for Economic Justice. He's the energy policy researcher there. And we also have Ruwen Naidoo from Argon Asset Management, the head of macro strategies. And I'd like to start with you, Ruwen. I mean, when the president spoke at the State of the Nation address last week, of course, the question of electricity and energy supply is a remarkably important one that everybody expected him to address. He did, of course, highlight that there are indeed some developments that have occurred in the past 12 months. The move to 100 megawatts was probably one that everybody sort of knew about. But behind the scenes, there's also been this era, which is the Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill that's up for public comment. Talk us through what it seeks to achieve. That line seems to have betrayed us, so we're going to try and get Ruwen on a better line. Brian from the Institute of Economic Justice, good evening. This era bill, what on earth is it trying to achieve?
Yes, thanks so much for having me. So I think basically these two changes must be understood together. The amendments to the Electricity Regulation Act is essentially the next, close to the final phase of the unbundling of Eskom into generation, transmission and distribution entities. And if you give me a second, I'll just give an explanation of what the significance of this means at a practical level.
Please do.
So when you are the South African power system, if we start from the generation side, among generators, you have many different types of generators. You have coal generators, diesel generators, wind, solar. Some of them are public, some of them are private. When you are delivering power, you're balancing supply and demand, so you expect a certain amount of demand of electrical users connected onto the grid, and you have supply available. You balance at 2 time levels, one on a day-ahead basis, and then the other at a 4-second basis. At a day-ahead basis, you decide how much coal, for example, you want to procure, how much diesel you intend to burn, how much water you need to pump up a hill for your pump storage plants, and so on and so forth. Wind and solar is different because the sun shines when it wants to shine, and the wind blows when it wants to blow. Now, you have that then feeds into a transmission network. Transmission network is like the roads that run through the country. It transports energy from where it is produced throughout to other nodes in the system. Eskom then has within it a system operator, which essentially procures energy from these public and private generators and dispatches it to distribution centers in the country. Distribution is mainly run by municipalities. then customers like you and I, who are plugged in now and using electricity, we typically plug into the almost all of us plug into the distribution network. Now, with unbundling, you change the system operator into an independent market system operator, which means that it's now an entity that sits outside Eskom that determines whether it buys from public or private generators on a different set of criteria. You also have a trading margin. So companies now bid to provide electricity, let's say, on day-ahead markets, so 24 hours ahead. Private generators bid to sell electricity to Eskom, and then they sell electricity on a wholesale market to distribution centers, which then arrive at the customer. So that change in the ERA essentially is consolidating that. And then because of that structural reform, you also need to change your pricing policy. That must also reflect the new shape of the system.
Sure. A lot to digest and a lot of important insights then coming through from Brian. And of course, Brian, this is something that a lot of us need to slowly digest. So the origins of this seem to be, from my recollection, it was when the new administration came in and then they said we're going to unbundle Eskom. And that seemed to be premised on the idea, or at least the actual fact, that up until 2018, there was so much going on at Eskom, so much chaotic scenes, and then there was load shedding. So when we first heard about the unbundling, I remember even the president appointed, I think it was an external service provider that was going to become, the guru for getting this unbundling. It seemed like they were trying to fix the issues relating to load shedding dimensions, the corruption issues that it emerged. It doesn't seem like anyone ever bothered to explain that, well, actually, this is how the entire value chain works, and this is what the implications are when you say that this is an unbundling exercise.
Yeah, this is part of a longer debate. Like you say, in the moment, not long after the transition, the origins of unbundling in South Africa, the electricity system started unbundled and then it centralized because it was cost effective to do so. After democracy, it was popular, across the continent, state-owned enterprises became liberalized, right, with market reforms that were pushed through by the World Bank. In 1998, we had an energy white paper that sowed the seeds of unbundling in South Africa. Trade unions and other progressives within the ANC and elsewhere opposed unbundling, and it did not take place, right? So the idea that unbundling solves load shedding is one of the justifying arguments, but really it's a set of ideas that are about how economies should be structured. There are people who believe that markets are more efficient, and liberalizing the electricity sector will stabilize prices and stable the supply side. So if you're a supply side economist, that's unbundling electricity is a natural pull for you. It's a natural pull for you. So for me, it's not about load shedding. It's about a particular way of understanding how the state should be organized.
Sure. Interesting insights there. I think we've got Ruwen Naidu back. Ruwen, are you back with us?
Yes, Kaya.
Ah, wonderful. I hope you caught the crux of what Brian and I have been deliberating on. Of course, now that we have a much granular, much greater understanding of this as part of the long-standing or that long pathway towards unbundling, what are your perspectives on the intentions of the Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill? What are we trying to do, and are we going to do it?
Yes, thanks, Kaya. So we at Algon Asset Management obviously come at this from a market view perspective. And the one positive that we're seeing right now is that Eskom does not require any government support for the year. However, there are many negatives when it comes to Eskom. I think big problem at the moment is energy available. The energy availability factor is down at 59% from around 62% last year, which means we need to run a lot more of those open cycle gas turbine engines to burn diesel. And energy prices have gone up across the board, including oil prices, which are up around 55% year on year. And all of these things are really affecting the consumer. So what we're concerned about is the impact on inflation. For instance, an increase of 20% hitting consumers could be generating about 0.5% of inflation down the line. But if Eskom does get a 15%, say, roughly tariff increase, then we're talking about no more government money for Eskom. So one way or the other, the consumer is going to be paying Eskom something, either through tariffs or through government.
And that's a sobering thought, because obviously at some point in time, whoever was responsible for getting Eskom to the mess that it's in now, there's probably not much we can do about it rather than try to work on towards on what is necessary in order to fix it. So the idea of unbundling, as I said earlier on to Brian, seemed to have gained traction from 2018 onwards. And for a lot of us that are sitting outside the energy sector and even the government sector, the understanding was that, you know, firstly, this was going to solve so many problems, whether you thought load shedding was the main issue, whether you thought corruption or perhaps, you know, the huge size of the balance sheet of Eskom was a problem. Unbundling was sold to us as the panacea of all of those. And now that we are listening to it now, it seems like perhaps that was not actually the most accurate reflection on what this unbundling exercise was all about. Nevertheless, this regulation seems to be part of that ongoing process. Does this get us closer to then saying we've achieved the unbundling and now let's live and understand the consequences of it, Ruan?
So achieving the unbundling, so what we've done so far is we've achieved the functional separation of Eskom into its three divisions.
Yeah.
The next leg, you know, as we know, is the legal separation and then removing transmission. Effectively, transmission is going to be the buyer and seller of electricity, seller to municipalities and buyer from distribution. So where does this take us? Distribution is going to be competing with renewable energy options for electricity. And our distribution network at Eskom is effectively a dinosaur. So that is heavy competition. So who's to tell what happens to generation? We do know that from transmission perspective, you're going to see increased costs as they modernize the network. And that's going to fall on consumers at the end of the day as well. And of course, when it comes to your distribution, you will have to consider that as shorter distances. So that's out of the question.
Sure. Yeah, so much to consider. Ruan, we do have a couple of callers for you. I'll take them and then get your perspectives and also perspectives of Brian. We're going to start with Ntokozo in Midrand. Good evening to you.
Hi, good evening, Kaya.
Yebo.
And your guest. Yeah, I just want to understand... just basically, when it comes to electricity, what method of billing are they using when it comes to us buying electricity? My point of departure is basically when I'm buying fuel, I understand that when I'm in KZN, it's different than it will be when I'm in Gauteng because of transportation, and I know that with electricity there will be third parties involved, but. Are there conversations happening in the background when it comes to pricing to say, if I'm buying for 1,000 Rand, can I not get 1,000 Rand? It might be a different kilowatt in terms of what I will get. But now it becomes too vague at this point. You buy for 1,000 Rand, and depending on the service provider, there'll be 30% gone, and you never know how much you're going to get.
Yeah.
Is there anything different or that is in discussion to say this is what you're paying for, what, 1,000 Rand, and you're getting this much for 1,000 Rand.
Okay, thank you very much, Ntokozo and Midrand. In Randfontein, we have Safudi. Good evening to you.
Kaya and your guest, how are you guys?
All good, brother.
I can't be okay about this. You know, electricity, before it reaches us, it travels through many hands, and those many hands would like to get something out of that, the value add from it. And it reaches us, when it reaches us, it has traveled from the PPE to Eskom, Eskom to municipality. Even from the municipality to the consumer, there are middlemen there. You buy for 200, you don't get the same thing. And it's privatized. The outcome from that, are we going to manage, are we going to afford it? Amidst the economic depression that the poor people are feeling as of now, we're not affording it as I'm talking to you, Kaya. Now, how are we going to afford it after it's now going to be highly privatized and there is a profit motive involved there? Good evening to you.
Thank you very much. There was a food in Randfontein and Sika in Molapo, Soweto. Good evening to you.
Yes, Kaya. I understand that Eskom must operate as a business and generate revenue to be sustainable. But it's unfair for those who are paying electricity, like in my village, yes, they were paying for electricity, for prices of electricity to decrease. Firstly, Eskom must address the question of non-payment before they can think of increasing their prices. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That is Ntega Molapo. Brian, I suppose it inevitably leads us to the question of the electricity pricing policy. Our callers seem to be quite concerned about what exactly is the ultimate impact on us as end users. The new policy, talk us through it.
Look, I think for me, if you want to look at what the chaos of liberalized electricity markets will bring, look at what's happening in Europe today. Unfortunately, in my opinion, the reform proposed in the electricity policy document will expose consumers to price volatility. So as I mentioned, that bidding that's happening on a day-ahead basis will mean that the wholesale price of electricity is set by the market, right? And we already see from the progression of the different bid rounds of just renewable energy alone that the market tends towards monopolies. So a smaller and smaller number of companies are building projects and are winning the tenders and capable of building the projects. That's true of energy systems all over the world. So you'll be trading within a few years, you'll be trading moving from a public monopoly into a handful of private monopolies. And the last speaker hit the nail on the head, who also now have additional mechanisms to solicit a profit through the electricity system. You know, in the EU, I think the Spanish government, it's a left-wing government, they are calling for reforms on the market to remove speculative actors on the price of electricity. And yet in South Africa, you know, we're talking as though we're expecting that these market reforms are going to deliver us to some kind of savior where there's no debt and supplies and the prices are stabilized without any real justification. When Ruan spoke about the increase in costs, I hope that our listeners realize that the change that's happening with the price meaning a more reflective price for what it costs Eskom to produce electricity. And the fact is that when generation is constrained, it will now mean that prices will increase in direct proportion to those realities. Right now, there's a buffer. NERSA acts to some extent as a buffer to that. So we're going to be hit hard and also additionally hit hard by the necessary action of the energy transition to move towards a low carbon economy, which is going to be costs. We've had a lot of the nice talk, and now the difficult talk is going to start hitting our wallets.
Sure. Difficult times. Ruan, whatever dimension we're in, Eskom is going to remain central to the country's electricity model. So we're not going to run away from them. We do know that historically they've had a lot of capital costs that they need to cover. They've got huge debts. This new electricity pricing policy, is it simply a matter that caters to the twinks and rather than deals with decisively with the question of how to make electricity cheaper? Is it even possible to make electricity cheaper?
Yes, whether it's possible to make electricity cheaper, it's difficult to answer. Whether we move into, as the other speaker mentioned, a liberalized or market-type economy or not in terms of energy, it's difficult to say whether it's possible to decrease prices. But what we do know is within the current construct of Eskom, it's impossible. Eskom has far too much debt, so its cash flow obligations to meet its debt just exceed its cash flow generation. So they're paying 30 to 40 billion in interest costs per annum against a debt load of almost 500 billion. So this is an interest cost that gets passed on to consumers. Then you've also got an aging fleet and you've got an unreliable new fleet, so-called modern fleet. So you've got to have maintenance costs and then running open cycle gas turbines in the meantime because the country does need, you know, electricity and reduce load shedding for it to function. So there's a cost that just gets passed on to consumers, whichever way you look at it.
I suppose there's no escaping the fact that we have to pay for electricity in one form or another. Brian, I suppose the liberalization of the electricity model does indeed bring tension points because we've learned the hard way over many years that sometimes when you do actually open up to the markets, the market themselves tend to be driven by a profit motive rather than the question of, well, how do we cater to so many citizens that need this particular resource and probably can't afford it? When we look at these bills and the way they've been crafted and formulated and we listen to the pronouncements of the president, is it inevitable that we are definitely going to end up with a new way of dealing and distributing and generating electricity? That, of course, means that we're going to have to get used to it, or is it something that can still be deliberated on?
No, I don't think it's not over. In fact, if you look at the history of some of these reforms, what typically happens is that there are periods of unbundling and then there are periods of reconsolidation and vertical integration. So it's going to happen. If this successfully goes through, it's going to be cyclic. And one of the reasons, as I mentioned, is that the energy market tends towards monopolies as well. And so the government will have to step in to break up the monopoly, and that tends to take that and to compensate for market failure, which tends to lead towards periods of nationalization again. So that is to say, I think that for progressives who see and who want to fight for an energy system that is based around public goods, that fight must continue. But we must also say that it's not true that there's no solution, that there must be mechanisms to deal with Eskom's debt that don't simply revolve around privatization, that must be put back onto the table. And if this process is too far gone, we need to be, you know, as the worst of these reforms take place, we need to be building, we need to be talking, we need to be planning and modeling. What does an energy system of the future look like that actually can meet basic service delivery needs, that is affordable, and so on, and that is also based on evidence? Because I think there's so many regulations have come out in the last 2 years. Have we really stopped to ask the question, what are the proposed implications here? Can we afford it? You know, in simple terms. And who can afford it? Who's this going to benefit and who's going to lose out? Because in truth, there are trade-offs. You know, we're kind of, I feel like Eskom and President Ramaphosa are skirting around the issue. There are trade-offs, and there are people going to be left behind by the path they're taking. So if we want to have a country where no one's left behind, that means a different kind of conversation.
A very important and overdue conversation. Ruwen, we've got the budget speech next week. And of course, in every budget, since as I mentioned, all the way back to 2008, the finance minister has had to deliberate on the question of the energy supply of the country, its implications for the economy, and then for many, many budget speech conversations, how much is going to be given to Eskom in order to keep it afloat. These days, you would imagine that things may have changed a bit, because if the government has been saying that for the past 4 years they've been working on a plan, we need to start seeing the fruits of that plan.
Agreed. I think, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the good thing is that there should be no further requirement for cash injection for the next financial year for Eskom. So thankfully, in this next budget upcoming, we are not going to hear the minister talk about cash injection, and it's too early to tell what would be required for the following financial year, because that depends on the outcome of the tariff decision. But Eskom does definitely feature in the budget in a major way in terms of what your GDP projections are and your economic growth projections, because there's no doubt that the economy is closely tied, tethered to Eskom, and Eskom's failures lead to failure of the economy. So therefore, looking out to the next 2 years, most economists are expecting growth to be around 2% after 4.8% this year. And that's really just a lack of energy supply, stable energy supply, cheap energy supply. And I do like what the last speaker mentioned about debt. A lot about the debt restructuring seems to have gone quiet, but some of that will come back as they go through the legal separation. But one thing to reconsider is those ideas of a debt for equity swap to elegantly solve the solution. Of course, nobody wants to convert their interest-paying debt into equity, into a loss-making business like Eskom. So there are other potential restructuring ideas that could be looked at. For instance, pension funds, such as those within the PIC, for instance, have long-dated liabilities. They owe pensioners money way down 70 years, 80 years down the line. They've got these long-dated liabilities, but they don't have those kinds of long-dated assets they can purchase in the market. What they do have is some Eskom bonds that they can buy along with government bonds, etc., in terms of matching liabilities. But because these bonds pay coupons, they'll pay interest payments, they're not very long-dated. So what Eskom could do is convert its current interest-paying debt into debt, so where you just borrow money and pay it at the end of the period. What this gives to the pension funds is a long-dated asset that they need. And therein you have a quid pro quo, something that works for the pension funds, but at the same time reduces the interest bill on Eskom's income statement. And we think this is a good idea to be pursued.
Definitely a lot to be considered, and I don't think we've got the hang of the country's electricity and energy crisis because there are so many moving parts. Unfortunately, completely out of time. I wish we could deliberate more on this conversation. It is 8 p.m. Time for Power News and then Power Perspective. We'll see you tomorrow evening at 6 p.m.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.